All right, this is the Michael Slate Show, and I'm Michael Slate. And right now, I'd like you to hear a message from Lenny Wolf, speaking on the threats of war in Ukraine.
This is a war. Whether Russia and the U.S. go to war, or whether, as Van den Heuvel says, the U.S. will take on China, this is a war between slave masters, okay? This is nothing but modern-day slavery. And when the slave masters fight, you don't side with one or another master. You don't side with my master. You take advantage of the fact that they're fighting to overthrow the whole institution of slavery, to get free. And this is how we have to look at it when these imperialists fight. We're not rooting for our imperialists. We are welcoming the defeat of these modern-day slave masters in whatever they undertake, okay? Because that is one step, or could be, if we do our work right, one step closer to being able to make a revolution to overthrow them altogether.
That was Lenny Wolf on Russia, Ukraine, U.S. imperialism, and how revolutionaries should approach this. Later on, we'll hear Lenny Wolf on the Revolution Nothing Less show, talking about Ukraine with the host Andy Z. At the very end of the show, we'll talk about COVID and the spreading of lies and disinformation that are killing thousands of people every week. And we'll talk about a few musicians, and that number should grow, who are taking a moral stand, a much-needed moral stand. And now, opening the show up, we'll be talking with author and activist Paul Street on a dystopian hellscape that humanity is facing. All right? I can never get those words all together. One, because it just makes you so damn angry, but it's going to be important that we're talking with him today. In November, author and activist Paul Street wrote an article for Counterpunch, "A Dystopian Hellscape Beckons, 21 Dark Clouds Over 2021 America." This is on Counterpunch, on counterpunch.org, and I really recommend that you go there and read it, all right? I was just really bumped up on it, all right, having done that. I really recommend that you go there and read the whole article. But right now, I'm very happy to welcome Paul Street back to the show to talk with us about this. Paul, welcome to the show.
Hey, Michael. How you doing?
I'm doing good.
Cheer everybody. I'm just trying to cheer everybody up for the Christmas season. You know.
There you go, man. There you go. Yes.
Dystopian hellscape. I forgot that was in my title. I remember the 21 dark clouds, but yeah.
Okay, man. Well, I'll tell you what. I'm sitting here and I'm thinking, what the hell, man? This is something that if you're not saying what the hell, I'm really worried about you. You know, that's a big thing. So
you know, if you're not terrified, you're not paying attention. This is getting really heavy. The situation is getting really heavy. I also want your listeners to know that I've got a book coming out at the end of the month. It's called "This Happened Here: Americaners, Neoliberals, and the Trumping of America," and you just Google all that up and you'll come right to it.
Absolutely. We want to be there in the front lines of your book coming out. All right. So as soon as you get that book comes out,
great.
We'll jump on it. All right. Well, look,
let me provide a little context here. When I say things are getting heavy and dystopian and dark clouds and all of that, if you ask me, there's three big sort of dark clouds hanging over, not just over America, but over humanity. One of them's been there since 1945, and it's sort of every year that we go by where the lunatics in charge of the nation states of the world haven't launched World War III, we're lucky. So thermonuclear war, that's sort of the standard one, right? Mm-hmm. Two, climate catastrophe, ecocide. Ecocide is not just the climate issue. It's a whole bunch of things. It's extinction. It's land use patterns and so forth, but the climate is in the vanguard of that. That's a little different than the nuclear war one. Every year we go by and then they don't blow up the world with nukes. We're lucky.
Mm-hmm.
The climate thing, every year that goes by and nothing is done significantly to reverse it, it just gets worse and more existentially precarious. It is fundamentally rooted in capitalism, the expand or die system of capitalism, which is addicted in investment terms to fossil fuels, and intimately related to the rising carbon issue is the menace and the threat of tipping points, whereupon that danger takes on a life in and of itself. I think more and more we have to be thinking of pandemics and pandemicide as a subset within the capitalist-generated ecological catastrophe. And the third one, and it's a lot of what this article that you're talking about, is fascism, which is the big topic in my next book, This Happened Here. And if fascism, and here we're not just talking about like one of six parties in Belgium, you know, or France or Germany, but about one of the major two only viable capitalist parties in the most powerful country in history and the most powerful country in the world, the most dangerous country in the world, United States. One of the two parties really has now crossed over into fascist space. And if fascism wins out in this country, which has power that Hitler could not have dreamed of in 1941, that the Third Reich could never have imagined, fascism wins here and elsewhere, because you have Bolsonaro and you have Hungary and there's a global issue too. The chances of fixing one and the chances of fixing two, and of course two is really all about capitalism, and fascism is a superstructural change in capitalism, but still capitalist. Then there's no chance of fixing one and two. And for me, it's not just about the Republicans. I also, in my analysis, have the Democrats as sort of the Weimar junior partner, collaborator in the fascistization of this country.
Mm-hmm. You know, it's really important, the things you're saying, and I want to go back to something that you started out with that, which I think people who aren't familiar with what you're saying or, you know, with what you've done, it's very important. And that the first point in your article is that the fascist beast is uncaged and chomping at the bit for vengeance. And you talked about the lack of consequence for January 6th, that, for instance, to the attacks on teachers and school boards and public health officials and local election officials. You know, to basically, right. Go ahead.
Well, you know, when I talk about fascism, it's really rather specific. An organization I've been affiliated with for the last few years, Refuse Fascism, would often get accused of, just extremist juvenility and just throwing the word around in a reckless kind of way because, you know, it's just this leftist way of smearing things we don't like. It's not true at all. Very specific about it. And it fascism, among many things, it includes a sort of vengeful nationalism and violent racism and cult of personality and untruth, but fundamentally is about a rejection of normal, normative, longstanding bourgeois democracy and a determination to go beyond constitutional rule of law and the embrace of political violence. You know, and in January 6th, literally, the deployment of mass racialized political violence to reverse, to undo the certification and prevent, it was a last-ditch coup effort, to prevent the certification of a normal parliamentary bourgeois election, you know, and the chief instigator of it, by far and away the chief instigator. I guess if there's anything new that's come out since I did my last book about January 6th, it's the depth and the degree of the White House buy-in and the elite coordination. We're learning more stuff every day about how involved Trump is with it. And the chief instigator of this, and of course of so much more, including a pandemicide that is probably responsible for half of the U.S. COVID-19 deaths, is running free. Is likely to be the 2024 nominee for the Republican Party. Is not in jail. You know, and that's just astonishing. And we know from his first campaign, one of his campaign managers for 2020, Brad Parscale, has said that he visited him recently and he wants back. Trump wants back, and it's not for any policy reasons. It's not with any particular, strong vision. It's for vengeance. It's for vengeance. He wants to punish and eliminate his enemies and show who's boss. And that could well happen for various reasons I talk about in the article.
Mm-hmm. And I just want to tell people real quick that basically, folks, you need to get this. You need to get this and read it and read the article and, you know, just follow along in here is fine, but I want you to really read it and think about what's being said and what needs to be done. Now, you know, tell me this, man, because as I'm doing this, I'm looking at it and I'm thinking, okay, of course, you know, it's not just a bunch of goons that are out in the streets. There's support for a fascist USA from the police and their spokespeople. Yeah. And there's Tucker Carlson pumping out all fascism's talking points and from anti-vax disinformation to the anti-immigrant great replacement theory. How do you see this? You know, because you're right in the middle of this, and you're actually, people are looking to what you're saying and what you're doing in a way of understanding what's happening. So let's talk about that. How do you see this all coming together, and what are the fascist talking points?
Well, it really doesn't look good. It's quite grave, particularly unless we have some sort of mass political intervention in the streets and the public squares and in the political process that the Democrats don't seem to have any interest in bringing about. You mentioned Fox News. Five nights a week, there's the Fatherland News hate hour. That's what I call it, the hate hour. That's from Orwell. And, you know, he defends a violent murderer of civil rights protesters like Kyle Rittenhouse. And, you know, he can't even bring out people like Glenn Greenwald to chime along in supporting that. And, of course, they denounce so-called critical race theory, which is an anti-intellectual way they have of justifying an assault on teaching basic truths about the role of race and racism in American history, you know. But at the same time, Hannity and Carlson, basically with a grip on a major media outlet here that is the basic source of information for millions and millions and millions of white Americaners, I call them, and they advance fascist replacement theory. I wish that phrase would catch on, FRT. It's this bizarre notion that there's a globalist, leftist, corporate Marxist, elite liberal conspiracy to replace the virtuous, hardworking, good, true Americans with people of color, immigrants and black people and so forth, who are accused of being inferior and lazy and criminal and indolent. And so forth. And there's a very strong racial overlay to all of this. I mean, really, they don't say it, but really behind and underneath the claim that the 2020 election was stolen, which is an utterly absurd claim, and then disproven many times over, is a white racial resentment over the fact that it was non-white votes that led to Trump, who had been briefly thrown down into the bunker by a pro-black civil rights rebellion called the George Floyd Rebellion, and then was exempt, and then was kicked out of the Oval Office through an electoral process. Not the best way to have gotten rid of Trump. We should have gotten rid of Trump through a mass movement. But in any event, we did vote him out. It was heroic and remarkable that we did. And it was black and Latino and Native American and non-white votes that were largely responsible for that defeat. And so there's a big, really strong racial aspect to this white nationalist neo-fascism that is rigging the electoral process quite expertly and quite craftily and quite strategically, particularly at the state level, and setting up 2024 for a full return to three branch across the board national power for, as I say, a party that has gone essentially now neo-fascist.
Mm-hmm. You know, let me remind listeners that you're listening to The Michael Slate Show, and we're talking with Paul Street. And basically, I wanted to, you know, the stuff that you've laid out is all very important, and it's stuff that people don't normally hear. And, you know, many people have said that the U.S. is like two different countries, you know, and that it's not just the fascists in the streets. The Republican Party is now there, a fully fascist party. It's now a fully fascist party, and it's out there. And this reflects a split in the ruling class, the ruling elites, a part of the rulers who are going for it, a fully fascist form of rule. And that's something that people actually, your head should sort of spin around a little bit when you read that. And I wanted to know what you think about that, because you're one of the few people that's actually talking about the reality of this.
You know, not just, you know, this is a very important point. I'm not just talking about the Proud Boys or the Oath Keepers or the Three Percenters or something. We're talking here, and Refuse Fascism has been talking consistently about not just one of five or six parties in a European country. No, the second of two, the only two viable capitalist parties in the country has gone fascist. And incidentally, it's the most structurally empowered of the two parties. That seems like a strange thing to say, because we have nominal democratic power in the White House right now, in Congress, so probably not for very long. And because of the constitutional electoral college and the two senators per state, no matter what their population is, apportionment system in the U.S. Senate, and because of gerrymandering, which is just going completely through the roof right now as we speak, because of those things, the Republican Party is the most structurally empowered. We have a minority rule system in which the Republican Party is rules way, way beyond its actual popular support. The Democrats have to win a much larger majority of votes in elections to prevail in elections, and that's just getting worse with the voter suppression and the election nullification that's underway now on an escalated level in under the name of the big lie in the red states of this country. The ruling class used to have a kind of cohesive connection. Well, I don't want to go into all of that right now. Let's just put it this way. I think that probably a majority of the corporate and financial elite, if you ask them privately, would prefer to retain the old parliamentary bourgeois democratic cloak over their underlying class dictatorship. And that's what bourgeois democracy always is. It's capitalism. Capitalism is a de facto underlying material class dictatorship. I think they prefer it, but it's out of the bag now. It's been let out of the bag. Their system has generated it. It has let it out of the bag. There are parts of the ruling class, wacky fossil fuel people and military industrial people and maybe smaller scale, medium-sized, heartland investors and bourgeois and so forth that really are committed sort of neo-fascist white nationalists. They resent the advances that black people have made since the 60s. They resent feminist gains since the 60s and the 70s, and they resent immigrant rights. You know, there is a revanchist section of the elite. But even in the part that isn't, that would prefer to maintain the sort of neoliberal Obama, Hillary, Biden, we just buried Bob Dole, centrist facade of bourgeois democracy, at the end of the day, do they really care? Can they really stop it anyway? I'm not sure that they can. It's so structurally empowered. The far rightward lurch of this country is deeply structurally empowered in the 18th century constitutional order. They can get by with Fox News and with small donations, even without the huge corporate funding. And if the profits keep flowing, then what the hell? The American ruling class has made alliances with and collaborated with fascism abroad since Mussolini, up through Hitler. It has sponsored and trained and funded and supervised third world fascism across the planet, all through the Cold War and since then. And, you know, if the profits keep flowing, it's kind of like the Melania Trump jacket that she wore a few years ago. I don't care, do you? And they'll make a deal with it. They'll make a deal with it. And they don't have a cohesion to stop it or possibly even the power to stop it now, and they will make a deal with it. I'm going on about it, but you get my point.
No, but it's important, and I think, look, it's not just like what they have in a certain sense, because it's also there's a basically that the society is being split in a very dangerous, you know, a very dangerous way in terms of,
absolutely,
you know, and it's something that keeps hitting people, but we have to actually, but too many people are letting it slide by. And when you're talking about all this, I mean, this is the thing, you know, you said we have two different countries. It's not just the fascists in the streets. The Republican Party is now a fully fascist party. And this reflexes a split in the ruling class, the ruling elites, the part of the rulers who are going for it, and a fully fascist form of rule. You know, and when I was going to ask you about, okay, let's dig a little bit more deeply into your thoughts on that. And it's at the same time, we also have something that's there of that we have to really figure out how to make, you know, basically dig in with and work with people who are opposed to this, people who are seeing all this stuff. It's very important that people actually begin to understand what is going on and then what they can do about it, what they need to do about it.
Well, you know, one thing that's rather disturbing, and, you know, you do hear all this stuff in Democratic and liberal media on MSNBC and to some extent on CNN,
about existential threats and existential menaces. And they get it at a certain level. They get that the electoral process is being completely rigged. And Barton Gellman at the Atlantic has written a brilliant article about how 2024 is shaping up as a constitutional coup with violence in the background to be used if required, but very possibly not, at least not until the protests after the election. You know, but there's this sort of underlying assumption that there was a democracy before all of this, and there wasn't. Bourgeois democracy has always been a contingent democracy. Popular input and popular opinion is tolerable insofar as it is perceived as being consistent with profitable operation of privately owned means of production, distribution, communication, and so forth. And it's always dispensable. It's always dispensable. And, maybe they got the hand, maybe they're reading the handwriting on the wall right now. You know, the old fashioned democracy may well be done in a neoliberal era when the top 1,000th owns as much wealth as the bottom 90%. I think the planet is full. You know, there's no more escape valves. It really kind of is socialism or barbarism. A guy who called himself socialist, he wasn't, but he called himself that, and he's pretty popular, named Bernie Sanders, damn near got one of the major party presidential nominations in both of the last two presidential election cycles. I think that shakes them up. I think the 24 million people that took to the streets in the George Floyd, Breonna Taylor, Jacob Blake rebellion of 2020, I think that shook people up, you know, and I think they just figure, what the heck, you know, that was nice. That the 2 centuries, whatever, of bourgeois democracy is nice, but it doesn't seem to be the trend in the world of authoritarianism. But I think it could be very nasty here. The American model of authoritarianism is heavily overlaid with patriarchy and racism that go back and are foundational to the beginning of this nation, and we have a gun saturation that I think is unparalleled anywhere in the planet. It's just astonishing how many guns there are afoot. So, I mean, I'm personally concerned about not just a fascism, but something that could take on a really bloody and genocidal aspect going forward. I mean, I'm just my guns here. What about military-style assault weapons? We can thank the neo-fascistic NRA for getting those in the hands of just untold masses of truly demented people, many of whom think that the 2020 election was stolen and are really pissed off about it.
Mm-hmm. Now we've got to make a quick announcement, and that is you're listening to The Michael Slate Show, and we're talking today with Paul Street, and we're talking about what's happening, you know, basically, what the hell is happening in the world right now in terms of the way things are shaping up and the dangers that are facing people, and what actually needs to be done about it. Now, Paul Street, I got to tell you this, man. part of this is, and it really gets to me because you're talking about all this stuff, and I keep thinking about, you know, here's this thing about we talk about the ruling class, the ruling elites, a part of the rulers that are going for it, fully fascist form of rule. You know, that is not things that people just normally think is like, you know, okay, maybe it's happening, maybe it's not. But there's a lot of people who should know better that don't know better and are actually looking at things from a different standpoint. It's like sort of it's the same old, you know, and just a little bit, you know, a little bit less, you know, a little bit less dangerous. But, you know, all this other stuff are, you know, a little bit less, you know, willing to work with it. And just sort of saying, well, you know, we don't really have to worry about it. Come the next election, it'll all be overdone. It'll be done. We'll have everything, you know, everything will be back to normal, whatever is going on. You know, there's not a pendulum swing in a certain sense if you want to deal with it that way. And too many people think that there is. I don't know if you want to talk on that for a little bit. I'd really like to hear.
Well, you know, there is something in the liberal and even the progressive community that the right doesn't have. There's a tendency to turn everything into a get-out-the-vote program, you know. So let's turn George Floyd into a vote for Biden thing. Let's turn Occupy into a defeat Mitt Romney thing. Everything tends to get sucked into electoral politics, and then they demobilize. You know, the right never demobilizes. It never stops. It's relentless. I mean, it's absurd that the right wing are the Leninists here, that they're the strategic people. They are constantly, they're a movement. They're constantly working to rig the system. They have studied the 2020 election. They have studied January 6th very carefully. And as Barton Gellman, who's a liberal Democrat, not as radical as me, but as he very intelligently shows in his recent Atlantic piece, I'm blanking on the title of it right now, they are quiet, well, I don't know if quietly, they are openly and explicitly changing the rules of the game at the state level. By the way, the right understands the importance of state-level politics in the way the left just doesn't. What happens in the red states is really, really important. What happens at the state level? It's the most neglected area level of politics. The ruling class on Trump, they were unbelievably ready to play along with him until like 99% of the way through his term, when January 6th was just a step a little bit too far, and there were some denunciations that came out from corporate America. They got a little pissed off by an open fascist assault on an election, right? And they've already, there are Boeing and other big corporations are already back to the funding of the right-wing the House caucus members, you know, but they were fine with Charlottesville and they were fine with kids in cages and they were fine with just the unbelievably violent and racist and horrible things that Trump did, including trying to have a military repression of the of the George Floyd rebellion. But, you know, we do deal now, and part of the equation is we do deal on the left now. I mean, even after January 6th, it's faded since January 6th, but all through Trump, I was catching hell from a certain type of leftist, so-called, typically a white male and more than 50, 40 or 50 years old, but a lot of them, sometimes calling themselves Marxists, who just were in la-la land and were calling people like me and other anti-fascists hysterical. You know, for thinking that Trumpism represented a real fascist menace to the country. And they had all kinds of ridiculous ideas, a big exaggeration of how working class and how proletarian the Trump base is, which thereby made them complicit in the fake populist branding of the neo-fascist GOP. And, you know, a lot of false accusations of being in bed with and accommodating of the Democrats, I mean, which is just, and anyone who knows my writing, who thinks I'm soft on the Democrats, it's just laughable. But we would catch this, oh, you're soft on the Democrats because you talk about where the Republicans have gone. Utter, complete, total, abject nonsense. In my analysis, consistently, the Democrats are complicit in, and part of this. We just talked about the pointing everybody to the electoral politics. I consistently, through Trump, said the way to remove this guy, and so did Refuse Fascism, and so did some others, some anarchists and some other lefties, said the way to get this guy out of there is the way the people of Puerto Rico got rid of Ricky Rosario. That would set new terms. It would create, that would have been the way to evict this fascist president. And, you know, the downplaying of racism and the downplaying of sexism, and the claiming that anti-racism and anti-sexism, to not see that leftists have their own version of anti-sexism and anti-racism and anti-fascism, and to fold it all into bourgeois liberal identity politics and bourgeois liberal virtue signaling, both of which are problems and exist, it's just really despicable and very problematic. And I've been at war with, and in my last book have a whole subsection on this really strange and depressing Trump and left phenomena. When I first came up with the term, it was kind of, I sort of meant it as a joke. I was kind of kidding. And it was a characterization of a bunch of people I was getting emails and social media messages from. And it really caught on. And it turned out to be describing a whole wing of folks. There really is a problem out there in what passes for a left on fascism and Trumpism, less after January 6th. A lot of people sort of, I mean, it's like, how do you deny it after January 6th, right? But still out there. It's really kind of bizarre.
Mm-hmm. You know, it's actually, yeah, it's kind of bizarre. It's also just looking at the thing, you know, when I was reading and preparing for the show today, I kept thinking about all the various things that people just actually, you know, there's a lot of denial on the part of people, but there's also people just don't get it, or they don't know it, or it's not available to them to figure out and be to figure out what's going on. But
I don't think it's just coincidental that about 90% of this crap that I've caught on the so-called left is from older white males, right? And related to it is a very economistic or political economistic concept of fascism that deletes completely the racial nationalism and the racism and also the patriarchy. And tends to accuse people who focus on those aspects of the menace on the right of being collaborating with bourgeois identity politics and virtue signaling. And it's really wrong. It's really wrong. There's a left approach to race. There's a left radical socialist communist approach to race and to gender and to immigrant rights and to sexual orientation that has nothing to do with those bourgeois liberalism and everything to do with anti-capitalism and anti-imperialism, which sees racism and patriarchy as foundational to the growth and expansion of American capitalism and American imperialism, and points out that to really seriously address issues, for example, of race and racism, is something that capitalism and American imperialism can never do. It never will. But framed properly, in a left radical way, it's actually quite radical to get serious about race. It's actually quite radical to get serious about gender, depending on how you approach the topic and the context within which you discuss it.
Mm-hmm. Now, you know, one thing that actually got me in very, very much in terms of what you've been putting forward, and I would like to, you know, dig into what you've been saying more around that, because it's actually, these are the questions that are facing people today. I mean, even you're talking about, what would the world look like if we go along with a fascist America? It looks like a Gilead, the system from The Handmaid's Tale, especially around the rights of women as well as the educational system. And I'd like to talk about that for a little bit, too, because this is something that people, you know, it's not just the question of the change in the way that it's developed and things are presented to us, but it's actually what actually happens in the sense of what we're getting now, where we're at now, what's happening in the society now. And this is something that's not just falling in place. It's actually something that is being particularly, you know, put there. And things are being chased not as, you know, oh, it's just it happened. There's actually a real, real movement to be what we've been talking about.
You mentioned Gilead and you mentioned so that you're bringing up the abortion issue, I think, to some extent. And while there's some decent liberal activism and commentary on that right now, pointing out that the neo-fascist, Christo-fascist right is completely hypocritical on right to life because you know, you have people here who are upset about vaccine mandates as a government tyranny, so-called, against the body, but then are completely ready to have the government impose the forced female enslavement of involuntary pregnancy and forced pregnancy. It's just ridiculous. And not to mention that the right doesn't, you know, this is the right, both fascist and pre-fascist, you know, is against basic supports, you know, safety nets for children, right? So they're anti-life. Also, by the way, they support ecocide and the destruction of liberal ecology, which is kind of anti-life. So, you know, the liberals are good at that. But then they what I've noticed is that, because I've been at some demos about this issue, they're framing it as a single issue, and they're not getting the connection between the right-wing position on life. And they're also now increasingly more and more the same people who are on board with the assaulting critical race theory, that they're on board with embracing political violence. The anti-abortion people are also have brought into the idiotic notion that the 2020 election was stolen. They're ready to embrace political violence. I can go on about that. And secondarily, they're also downplaying the need for the liberals or the need for mass resistance in the streets. They're surrendering in advance on Roe v. Wade. It's really kind of pathetic to behold. And this is very a typical liberal kind of thing. They just don't want to get serious about things and take it to the streets. You know, what the world would look like would include that it would be a patriarchal Gilead state under fascism, and increasingly not just in the however many states that have terrible abortion laws, but I would expect that to be extended and expanded in a fascist America, probably to the whole country at some point. But it would be a world in which, the main reason to have broken form, and I did with my usual alienation complete from the electoral process, and to vote for Biden to come in, was just breathing room, some breathing space, some on COVID, quite literally, you know, because the COVID policies of Trump were just awful. They were pandemic fascists. But to have some breathing space to try and organize against this underlying class dictatorship of bourgeois rule and the empire that's intimately connected to that. They're sort of joined like twins, you know, at their foundation, empire and capital. There's no chance for resistance. That's the point of fascism. Under fascism, under authoritarian rule, under the rule of the fraternal order of police and a politicized military and paramilitary thugs in the streets. And, you know, Kenosha was very much about coordination and cooperation, the classic sort of fascist coordination collaboration between state gendarmes and extra state paramilitary. In that kind of world, you don't get to organize for anything, and you certainly don't get to organize for socialism, which we desperately need eco-socialism if humanity is going to have any chance. There's no space. I'd prefer to live in a bourgeois world where I don't get a bullet in the back of my head and thrown out of a helicopter for my left-wing beliefs. And, you know, just in case anyone thinks that's a wild kind of thing, Trump embraced the Proud Boys. The Proud Boys marched in Washington, D.C. with T-shirts that said not only 6 million wasn't enough, meaning 6 million Jews wasn't enough to kill the Holocaust. They also had T-shirts that said Pinochet did nothing wrong. I mean, they're quite serious about that. And what did Pinochet do? Among other things, he had leftists thrown out of helicopters. They will do that at some point. I think first they go after the liberal elites, but leftists, including some of my enemy Trump and leftists, will catch hell further down the road.
Yeah, absolutely. We're going to have to wrap up real soon, but I wanted to ask you, you know, I think this is really important here, this last question. I could spend another hour talking with you about it, but, yeah. You know, this basically, all this is occurring at a time when we have the greatest crisis facing our species, you know, the environmental destruction that's on its way to changing the nature of the planet itself. And there's a widespread problem of passivity. Some of it brought on by the way that the system uses elections, like, you know, you vote every year, every 4 years, and that's it. How are we going to deal with this? I mean, this is what seems to be something that's really right there, and people do have to not only just recognize that it's there, but they actually have to figure out how the hell are we going to deal with this, because this could, in fact, be the end of it all.
You know, I would say already has changed the planet. I noticed here it's Christmas season and I'm in Chicago, and I've noticed this for the last few years. I mean, I don't have to tell anyone about the weather changes, but I mean, it feels like Missouri and Tennessee now up here, and it has for a while. So, you know, we already have changed the planet, and it's not just a weather change. We are on pace for the melting of the Antarctic in 2050. Younger climate scientists of child raising or bearing age are not having kids right now because of what they see, what they're projecting coming forward. And, you know, this is fundamentally about capitalism. You can't blame fascism for this. This is the expand or die, fossil fuel addicted, anarchy competitive, chaotic global system of capitalism, of course, led by the United States. So, you know, you what can we do about it? Well, it is very important to keep authoritarianism in all of its forms, and here in this country, its fascist forms, at bay. It does have to be defeated. I mean, the ballots are fine, but it's going to have to be defeated in the streets, because there's no chance of stopping ecocide or any of the other maladies of capitalism under fascism. That's the point. Fascism never breaks with capitalism. Fascism is a superstructural change within capitalism. It's born of modern industrial era capitalism. And I think, you know, naming the beast and naming the enemies is really, really critical. And talking about the difference between the politics of who's sitting in the White House every 4 years. Well, oh, okay, we voted and everything's okay now. No, the politics of who's sitting in the streets and the public squares. I think naming the beast and being in the streets, and those two are related. Because when you really get serious about what we're up against, things like ecocide, pandemicide, and fascism, When you get serious about those things and the connection between them, you can't just sit on your couch and be armchair anymore. So, you know, it's great that Barton Gellman and liberals at MSNBC are talking about existential menaces, but we really need to call it out for what it is and to talk about the need for something far beyond the type of activism that the commercial sponsors are at MSNBC and CNN, the New York Times and Washington Post are ever going to be comfortable with. And that's a struggle, and that's agitation, and that means struggling with people and engaging them. And so an outlet like this right now, where we're having an honest discussion about that, is very, very important. We need 1,000 more of these.
All right, Paul, we're going to have to...
We can't give up. You know, the chances of doing this might be 1 in 10 or 2 in 10 or 3 in 10. Why bring them down to 0 in 10 with fatalism and pessimism in advance?
Absolutely. All right, Paul Street, thank you very much for joining us today. And I hope we'll hear from you again before too long.
Hey, super, Michael. Thank you.
All right. Take care, man. You're listening to The Michael Slate Show, and we've just been talking with Paul Street. And Paul, you know, Paul's a very interesting guy. He's basically an author, an activist, and he's on the dystopian hellscape that humanity is facing. He's always talking about that, and it's important that we actually realize this, okay? We're going to take a quick musical break and be right back, so stay tuned. All right, Green Day, Troubled Times, that was that. These days, it seems like every major contradiction in the world is becoming more intense. The climate crisis, the rise of fascism, the oppression of women who are half of humanity, and imperialist war. The latest opinion poll I read said that 54% of Democrats support U.S. military action in Ukraine. Nobody who cares about the 7 billion people on this planet should support the aims of the imperialists. And we're going to hear why from Lenny Wolf, speaking about Russia, Ukraine, U.S. imperialism, and how revolutionaries should approach this. This is from the Revolution Nothing Less show, and Lenny is talking with the host, Andy Z.
Potential Russian invasion of Ukraine.
Biden is now considering shifting thousands of U.S. troops to shore up Eastern European and Baltic allies.
What role exactly should America be playing? Joining me now to discuss, Katrina Vandenhoevel, the editorial director and publisher of The Nation magazine.
We, Anand, you know, I mean, we've been the indispensable nation. We've been the America, the exceptional. If we continue to police the world and there's militarism, we will not have the resources at home to deal with the great crises we face, whether it's inequality, whether it's existential climate crisis, whether it's racial division.
I'm here in the RNL studio in Los Angeles, California, with Lenny Wolf, a writer for RevCom.us, a comrade, a friend, and a leader of the Get Organized for an Actual Revolution tour. Welcome back to the RNL show, Lenny.
Good to see you, Andy.
So we're going to talk today about the situation that's brewing in Eastern Europe between Russia, headed by Putin, who has been amassing over 100,000 troops on the border of the Ukraine, a country just to the west of Russia, threatening to invade. And the powers of Europe, the different countries there, and with President Biden sending $200 million worth of arms to the Ukrainian people, as well as threatening to send troops. And so it's a very dangerous situation. So if you could just take our viewers, give them a basic understanding of the situation, then we want to get into what's in this, what's the interest of the people of the world in this struggle.
Look, part of what's going on in the world today is that the great powers are contending with each other. The great powers, the imperialist powers, are contending with each other right now over who's going to have the lion's share of exploiting and plundering the world. And that's what gives some of the intensity to what we see going on now. And other, you know, and that has fallout then in the battles between the different sections of the ruling class within the United States.
Okay, so we should, that's something I want to get into, because, you know, if you're reading the newspapers, listening on the internet, social media, every place, you see that there's all kinds of advice that different forces are giving to the ruling class. You know, go here, do it this way, do it that way. And I think for some of our viewers, that's confusing. And in fact, do any of these positions that have been put forward actually represent the interests of the masses of people? I think we want to focus in, though, on something that probably influences our audience more than many other points of view, which is the publisher of The Nation magazine, Katrina VandenHeuvel, which is a progressive liberal magazine for, you know, 150 years or something like that. It also writes for The Washington Post, and she wrote a column this week that needs to be looked at. So I wonder if you could just talk about that.
Yeah, well, first of all this advice that's being given from every quarter really doesn't mean that much to the ruling class. This is not the people who are actually leading the empire, who are making the decisions about where to fight, where not to fight. They don't care about Katrina VandenHeuvel's opinions on what they're supposed to do. They do care about her effectiveness in getting people who actually have no interest in any of this, siding with any of these imperialist powers, they do care on how effective she is in doing that, in getting us to think as if we are share a common interest with these imperialists. In her column last week, she says, with the United States desperately needing to focus attention and resources on the challenges posed by the pandemic, debilitating economic inequality, severe racial division, and catastrophic climate change, and as the administration positions itself to take on China, the last thing we need is a war by proxy with the Russians over Ukraine. Listen to this just one more time. As the administration positions itself to take on China, the last thing we need is a war by proxy. Listen to what she's doing here. In the name of counseling peace, she's actually advising the government and the ruling class of this country that they should concentrate on confronting China. And she's trying to rope you into that mentality. Yeah, well, we should be confronting China. You have no interest in confronting China, okay? You are not part of that we that she's talking about. We've got to do this. Think for a minute, who is in this we? Just to take one example, does this we include the 10, 8, 7-year-old girls and boys in the Congo who spend their days mining cobalt for cell phones and electric cars, and who are right now, the Congo has been for 25 years torn by terrible civil war that's taken literally several million lives because of the contention between the imperialist powers over who is going to monopolize that? Is that who we are? Is that why we need to position ourselves against China? These are ways that the real we, those of us who actually want a better world, those of us who stand with the 7 billion of humanity, need to become critical thinkers and analyze it when they're training us to think in wrong ways and self-defeating ways.
So they've got you thinking you have an interest in this. And how does she appeal to you? She says, well, we've got challenges from the pandemic, from debilitating economic inequality, from racial division and catastrophic climate change. We have things here. And so we shouldn't get distracted by a war with Russia. We should get into a war with China to advance our interests. But are they our interests? Think about this. All these things that she's appealing to you that you want to see done are resting on a foundation of empire. It's resting on those children that Lenny spoke of before from the Congo, on that super exploitation of those children. That's the we that they're trying to separate you from. Our we is with those children, not with the ruling class. And just by the way, if they do go to war, who do you think's going to fight that? It's going to be the children and the young men and women of the people in this country who are most oppressed by this and have no interest in that war. So I think we...
One last thing, Andy. Yeah. This is a war, whether it's between Russia, whether Russia and the U.S. go to war, or whether there is, or whether, as Van den Heuvel says, the U.S. will take on China. This is a war between slave masters, okay? This is nothing but modern day slavery. And when the slave masters fight, you don't side with one or another master. You don't side with my master. You take advantage of the fact that they're fighting to overthrow the whole institution of slavery, to get free. And this is how we have to look at it when these imperialists fight. We're not rooting for our imperialists. We are welcoming the defeat of these modern day slave masters and whatever they undertake, okay? Because that is one step, or could be, if we do our work right, one step closer to being able to make a revolution to overthrow them altogether.
I just want to conclude then with where this is concentrated in a principle of the new communism developed by Bob Avakian. He says, it is crucial that people come to see what the nature of these wars being waged by their government actually is, and why these wars have to be actively opposed. And even if you can't or shouldn't support the other side, you still have to have the basic approach of welcoming the defeat of your own government in the wars it is waging. The defeat of these imperialists should be welcomed because, number one, their wars are unjust. And even if the people opposing them are also unjust. And two, every such defeat weakens the system and its ruling class and brings closer the time when people can actually bring it down and bring something liberating into being in its place. End quote. This is from The New Communism by Bob Avakian, which you can find on revcom.us, and you can order a copy from Revolution Books online. So I think maybe that's a place for us to wrap up this discussion. We'll be covering more of it. You want some a last word?
And I want people to go to revcom.us, read the articles we have there, which elaborate on this in more depth, and stay tuned. If this heats up, we'll probably be publishing more than just once a week on Monday morning. Other than that, no, I think the quote from BA is the way to end this, the way to take this out. And
all right. Well, thank you for coming back to the RNL show and shedding some light on what is a very a situation that's very confusing to a lot of people and to our audience. And that's part of what we do here at the RNL show, is to bring to you looking beneath the surface as to what's really going on and where the interests of humanity lie.
Now, as Paul Street was talking about, the fascists in the Republic Fascist Party are actually helping spread COVID, and they have help from people like Joe Rogan, a former wrestling announcer who used to be known mainly for hating trans people. A couple of weeks ago, a letter signed by 270 doctors and scientists demanded that the streaming service Spotify stop allowing Rogan to spread his lies on their service, lies that are directly leading to people dying. When Spotify did nothing, Neil Young demanded that they either get rid of Rogan's lies or take his music off the service. He was immediately joined by Joni Mitchell, another legendary singer and songwriter, Nils Lofgren, a guitarist, musician, and vocalist with Bruce Springsteen's E Street Band, joined them, writing a challenge for other artists. He said, "Music is our planet's sacred weapon, uniting and healing billions of souls every day. Pick up your sword and start swinging." So we're going to go out with a song from Neil Young and Crazy Horse, "The Days That Used to Be." Talk to you again next week.